Hello everybody and welcome to our latest Charter Digital podcast. Today we're going to talk about some of the digital fundraising trends to watch out for over the coming month and into 2024. I'm particularly looking forward to this one as I know many charities are planning their end of year fundraising campaigns and strategy at the moment. So hopefully it is timely for everybody. Thanks to our content team, we'll try to give you a few insights into what we're seeing here at Charity Digital and into the sector. 2023 has proved another challenging year for the sector. We see the cost of living crisis has provoked a cost of giving crisis, meaning that many charities have been faced with less funds to deal with increased demand and also higher operating costs. As ever, we've seen loads of organizations prove their resilience with a host of novel fundraising solutions and different forms of service delivery. And we know that in 2024, our sector will go even further. They will flex their muscles with flexible giving, invert expectations with inverse giving, prove antisocial on social media, and embrace the art of artificial intelligence, start playing around with gaming for good, and so much more. The future of fundraising is a fascinating landscape with plenty of room for experimentation. So we'll discuss all of the above and much more. We'll probably start with the core challenges and obstacles that many organizations are facing, looking at the tools that can help with fundraising and way more. With me today, I have Laura Stanley and Ewan Mark Jones. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Hiya. And without further ado, let's dive straight in. Laura, do you want to kick us with a few insights into what the main fundraising trends for 2024 should look like?
Yes, I would love to. So a big thing that you mentioned in your intro is inverse giving. So there was a summer donor pulse report from NPUs that found out that 48% of Gen Zs have engaged in inverse giving in the last 3 months. And this does tend to go down as people get older. Mm-hmm. 8% of over 65s, for example, have engaged in inverse giving. But what inverse giving actually is it's when a charity might hit the headlines for reasons that you wouldn't really want to. Mm-hmm. For example, the best example is, and the most high-profile example, I think, is the RNLI, who hit the headlines because they were saving for their actions in the sea, helping migrants. And they hit the headlines because, they were being attacked in the right-wing media.
Press, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then as a result, they had a record fundraising year because they were able to talk about their mission. They were able to say, this is exactly what we do and why. And it really helped people engage with them.
Mm-hmm.
They saw a record fundraising year. That's inverse giving. Gen Z, are far more likely to engage in inverse giving than political giving. There's a 10 percentage point gap between that. Mm. Political giving is when you give to a political ideal more than a...
Okay.
It's a bit different.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think political giving will be more solid to a demographic probably mm-hmm. than inverse mm-hmm. giving, which will change for the charities as and when they hit the headlines.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just generally, I think events can have a really big... headlines have a really big impact. I think last year we saw more donations but less donors in 2022. And a lot of that was driven by the crisis in Ukraine. A lot of people donating to that, obviously. Mm. And then also there was a downturn in donations, I believe. I might need to double check this, but there was there's a Christmas Giving Insights report also from NPUs that revealed that donations changed a little bit around the World Cup, and they thought the World Cup was probably a factor in December compared to the years before. So yeah, events, look out. I think it's looking out for anomalies like that. There's a lot of them, and they will, I guess that's probably not a trend, is it? But but headlines have a really big impact on our fundraising, as they always have. But I think we just need to watch out for them in a hyper-connected world like we are in now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think the point is that we've realized just how strong headlines are. And I think we always knew the positive headlines. We've seen with social media, which actually is a kind of maybe a counter argument to that is that social media is not as predictable these days. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things that I've noticed is actually for the first time, I write a fundraising trends article every year since 2001. And this is the first year I haven't said that certain social media are going to grow, you know. So typically you look to the classics and then you saw stuff like TikTok, Snapchat, so on and so forth, grow up and become more popular. And it was the advice was typically pick a platform that your demographic's on, pick a platform that applies to your audience, look at the new ones and see if you have options there. The RNLI are pretty strong on, they have a TikTok, don't they?
They do.
That's really good.
It's very good.
So they're a good example of someone who's doing that well. But with the headlines, they take advantage of those and they use it on socials. But I just think this year we've seen that social just isn't as dependent as we always thought it was. That's obviously quite true with Twitter. Well, I mean, I don't need to go into a lot of detail there. Everyone's been following that, I'm sure. If not, go on Twitter and you can follow it. And the other thing to do is, the other thing that's of note is Facebook. They've been letting people off. The metaverse, the big thing people talked about last year, not sure where that is. And there's a sort of renewed attention of where it's going to be, but it seems very much like conjecture at the minute. Mm-hmm. So I just look at social media and I think those trusted platforms that we always felt just naturally should be applied, mm-hmm. that's not true anymore. I don't think you have to be on Facebook. I certainly don't think you have to be on Twitter anymore. It's not a natural place for charities. Mm. And there's a big question over toxicity as well. Is yes, you might want to be on them to raise some funds, but is that really how you want your brand to be known now? I mean, maybe that's something to move away from. I think weigh up, I would say my advice would be, is weigh up the advantages and disadvantages, the pros and the cons, and decide which platforms you want to delve into. In terms of inverse giving, which Laura mentioned, I think there's another element of inverse giving, if I may, which is sort of the economic side of inverse giving. So you have the negative headlines, but then you have the economic inverse giving, which is basically when giving defies expectations. So a lot of people sort of feel like there's a correlation between GDP for a sort of if a high level sort of metric of judging the economy, economic growth, and giving. And that correlation actually doesn't exist. And the reason being is when GDP goes up, yes, we see a bit of an uptick in donations. But when GDP goes down, when you say suffer, for example, a cost of living crisis, we actually see that sometimes donations surprise you, they go up. We saw it during COVID when we saw a massive donation boom. And we're seeing it again with cost of living. And the reason is because A, charities take advantage might be a strong term, but nonetheless, they use the information that's available to them and they kind of use it in their comms in a way that appeals to the fact that they are struggling and their service users are struggling more than ever. And they use that to garner donations for good reason. They're meeting demand. So yeah, there's that as well. So two sides of inverse giving is when you're looking at the cost of living crisis, I think one trend we'll see is play on that, include it in your comms and make sure that people know that you are struggling and be honest about it. I think that's we'll see a bit more of that in 2024 where people are being like, no, look, we're struggling and we need help and help us, you know, you're right and you should.
And I think that's a lot about where inverse giving in the sense that I was talking about comes from. It's from honesty. So RNLI was super honest. This is what our mission is, blah. It's transparency, isn't it? Both things, like be transparent with the audience if you're struggling. People will, I think I did write an article saying, is the cost of giving crisis a myth? And I don't think it is. I think it's a worthy fear. I think a lot of charities have been struggling. And they think, obviously, asking for money has to be done a lot more sensitively in an economic crisis. And of course you're going to worry about the reliability of your income at that point. On the other hand, as I said, in 2022 the amount of money raised rose by £2 billion based on from 2021. So
yeah,
while the donors decreased, the donations increased. People rally.
Absolutely. And they and I think one of the key impact in 2022 was the DC Ukraine appeal unfortunately the war in Ukraine that resonated with quite a lot of people I would say in Europe because many people saw it as something very close to home. But that's really interesting. And back to your point about social media, Johan.
Thank you. But remember, we've worked together for nearly 3 years.
Sorry.
Ian, was it?
I think it's Ian over there. And Lara. I want to say Lara.
Ian and Lara. Going back to, obviously, both of you have, many of our listeners have seen the very clever WWF ad using the sort of Twitter and rebrand and linked it to their cause. So obviously this whole rebranding of Twitter now X exudes a bit of, you know, weirdness. We don't really know where it's gonna where it's going to end up. But some charities have very cleverly been able to turn that challenge into an opportunity to engage people and connect them to their mission. I was also reading I think it was maybe on the Guardian that again on X, loads of people that were you know, receptive to climate change news and very involved in climate, you know, climate change information, were actually leaving the platform. We're actually leaving X and going to other platforms. So obviously, for any environmental conservation charities, it might be that your key audience might be actually leaving some of the social media platforms. So this is probably a trend we're going to see more of in the new year with, you know, the apparition of Threads, you know, whether TikTok or Instagram are going to grow instead. So definitely one to look out for. But I would say, and we would all say, the where your audience is what matters. Yes, so obviously, exactly.
And that's not changed. Exactly. It's the same thing. You and just have to factor in the weirdness, as you put it.
Exactly.
It feels like it's another experimental year, doesn't it? A little bit, as in adaptability is such a big part of what charities have done and have been doing for the last few years. And I just feel like that's
The promised stability isn't quite here yet.
No, exactly.
And I think cost of giving, I'd say the other thing to mention on this is flexible giving. That's obviously a buzz. It's a buzz term, and it's a frustrating one in many ways because I don't think a lot of charities actually know how to do it.
Yeah.
So a lot of people are talking about you have to have flexible giving. And to be honest, when I've done research, it's not that simple. You know, it's actually a bit more difficult. But I think the payoff is strong because you will retain donors where otherwise you will lose them. So the cost of giving crisis is, of course, cost of giving crisis is real to an extent, particularly for certain charities.
Yeah.
I think typically this what we call inverse giving boon, like i.e. a reactive boon, comes from usually the beneficiaries of that are the charities that are related to the causes. So for example, with COVID, we saw a lot more money given to hospitals. Yeah. We saw the huge boost for the NHS charities, you know. And the same thing with cost of living. I think homeless charities,
food
banks, they're seeing a bit of an increase, but charities that mission don't relate to the trend, as it were, the economic crisis is a better term, they're not seeing the payoff. So with flexible giving, I think the idea is that you can still retain your users by stopping, reducing, allowing them to have the freedom to stop, make the payments less regularly, reduce the payments while they don't have a lot of excess income, and basically tailor it so that it's more sustainable for them personally, financially, and then basically retaining them. And then the idea is that when prosperity comes, and we saw some good economic news today, inflation's falling faster than we thought it would, and in the future they may increase that spend again. So that's the hope, and that's the joy of flexible giving if you can do it. As a donor, it's actually really simple. There's places like, I think Toucan has an option, which also has like a language learning option. So I don't know if you want to learn a language and give flexibly. Toucan seems to be the place to go. flexible giving accounts as well. They're online. And that means you can just use an app and pay people the amount you want when you want, as opposed to having the quite subscription model.
Yeah, direct debit.
So
model,
that's good for donors. But I must say, like, I think charities should look into flexible giving as much as they can. But it's not quite as easy as so. Rather, I don't want to just buzzword like you have to get involved in flexible giving, but do research it. And if your platform allows it,
yes,
then, you know, because I mean, I know a lot of platforms don't.
I mean, charities will know much more about this than I will. But we see, you know, CRMs are able to look after your supporter journeys and look after communications with lapsed donors. So but presumably it could be a case of adapting things.
I'm presuming there's there's widgets and stuff like that you could get for donation buttons. But all I'm saying is, I think more than anything, when I looked at it, there wasn't easy advice on it. We're going to commission easy advice on it, by the way, so stay tuned and check the charity. But one thing I would say is it's also not widespread. I haven't seen charities doing it a lot. And that's the key thing when these things... And there is probably good reason for that. The solid income for financial sustainability is always obviously a really good thing to know we're getting X amount from X amount of donors per month.
Exactly.
That's what charities want because it allows them to plan, allows them to budget and so on. Exactly. To have that, what could be a chaotic amount coming in and out and people going back and down might be a challenge for charities, but it may be one that you really want to pick up. If you see your regular donations going down, that's one way to tackle that issue. You just have to have a new model of financial sustainability, but that's, I mean, you just have to do, just get a new model. But it is just working your way around a different problem, I think, if that makes sense.
And there's a statistic, so isn't it 60% or more of donors said they would welcome?
Yeah, it is.
It would welcome, different way. Like, for instance, having PayPal, having Google and Apple Pay, being able to modify the direct debit amount. Mm. And I think direct debit is also sometimes a big thing that involves a lot of paperwork and a lot of work in the background from on the charity side to get that to get that sorted and to get that amended. So like you said, there can be some platform challenges, but in terms of the sort of easy solutions, I think they are we probably will see some easy tools easy tools, and we probably will go down, I think it's in the third question, the digital tools that can help charities. We can definitely but I thought obviously we started talking about some of the challenges for digital fundraising. How can charities overcome those challenges, and I don't know if you want to perhaps start with economic and artificial intelligence?
I mean, AI is one of those things where every single podcast we have to mention it a little bit. And we've tried to have podcasts on AI, so we don't have to mention it so much. So check those out if for more in-depth sort of analysis. But AI for fundraising presents a lot of opportunities that are not exactly tangible in terms of or exactly related to fundraising. But, you could look at, for example, content production is one. I mean, we do caveat that with, AI is not a fully fledged writer. It produces poor content. You shouldn't use it just automatically. But that's one way that people attract donors and raise awareness. So you could use that to streamline your processes, produce more content, and maybe attract more people. I think that's one way. Others is like stuff like data analytics. AI can be super helpful for that.
Oh, yes.
So you can track how your fundraising is coming in. It can actually give you loads of information. And a lot of this is on the premium ChatGPT sort of stuff. But if you go to, what was that?
£20 per month.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty reasonable, I think.
Let's see,
Well, yes. depending on your usage, because I find that, I mean, we don't have, I use the, when I have used it, and I use it only minimally, because I'm a content writer and it has problems. When we have used it, I've always used the free version. The other thing, it was data analytics is really good. The premium version particularly can give you this wealth of data, which you can use. But then there's stuff like, it can improve your chat bots. It can improve your, we saw AI used on a chat bot that actually pretended, I think it was not, it was like a chat bot that could basically present itself as a service user.
I forget, it's
escaping with me who it was. It wasn't for training, it was actually for fundraising. So basically, what did you think?
I feel like it was a water charity, but
that was Selu. That was a different. That might have been. I think that was more a created one, but this one was one that could actually just respond to what you were saying based on the input. It gave you an idea of what they were going through. Of course, there are moral risks here, and I think that's obviously worth mentioning.
I was going to say you should go back and listen to our AI podcast, because our transformation manager Kiki discusses some of the ethical issues with data, and I thought that was very interesting.
I was also on that podcast, data-wise. And apparently she didn't find my input that interesting, but...
Sorry, Ian.
AI's got a lot of opportunity for fundraising. And the best way to go about that is just look at the way it can streamline things for you I mean, just looking at automation, it can update donor databases, orchestrate sort of consistent communications, scan social media for prospective donors, streamline labor-intensive fundraising procedures, and so on and so forth. Like, these are just some of the small tasks that it can. I think AI, sorry, last thing, I've rabbited on a bit here, but I think the one benefit that I think the future of AI will prove, everyone talks about these drastic sweeps, and it's definitely something we need to be cautious about, but it's the small little things, the incremental things on the daily basis that it can transform and automate. That's where the real revolution is going to be, in the small, not the big, I don't think.
Yeah, I agree. Yes, and actually was somebody who shared some thoughts at the Charity Connects Connection event. I think it was Horwood Lake from UK Fundraising that had a talk about AI for fundraising. Mm. And I just found quite interesting that he mentioned a couple of tools beyond ChatGPT, one being the Charity Excellence Framework collection of AI tool and advice that obviously is free of charge for charities, and that you know, our listeners can check out. But essentially, the idea is, like you said, small incremental change that, you know, you can use AI for, and then at the end of the year, at the end of the quarter, you realize how much time you have saved, whether that's, like you said, you know, streamlining processes or understanding, obviously, first of all, mapping out what you hate doing as a team instead of the repetitive task and things that are boring, and maybe you can get AI to do for you. How you can maybe prompt AI to have some interesting subject line for your email marketing, for fundraising, and then work from there, and then you realize perhaps at the end of the quarter how much time you have saved in that part creation, not the whole creation process, but part of it, that enables you to spend more time on fundraising activities. But I found some of his insight quite good in terms of mapping out and writing down what AI can help you with the repetitive tasks, and how it can help you save time and ultimately money, you and your team. So, you know, those are, but obviously AI has got some ethical questions that some of our podcasts, more than one, have actually covered. You wanted to add, Laura, perhaps on AI or other challenges that charities need to be aware of?
Can I add a little bit about AI in terms of, I went to a really interesting meeting with a giving platform. They were thinking about adding AI as part of their service to give to charities so they could encourage the fundraisers to create stories. So when the worst thing or the hardest thing, I think, can be setting up your page and being and just wondering how you're going to persuade people to donate to you, especially if you're running a marathon and you probably have to raise quite a lot of money to do that. So they can, charities will be able to give sort of AI tools to their fundraisers to help make that easier. I found that really interesting.
Oh yeah, automatically creating fundraising pages, for your when you do peer-to-peer fundraising. Might be wrong, by the way, don't quote me on that, but that's one way I could see it.
Yeah.
So charities could give some sort of template for their fundraisers and when you do peer-to-peer fundraising.
And good charities are already doing that, and in an extent they have like the guidelines that they give out to people. And I was reading a Gaming for Good guideline earlier, and that there's no reason that you couldn't AI-ify. Mm. Created a new verb.
That's that's not a word.
No reason you can AI. No, I can't even say it.
That
now.
As definitely not a word.
But yeah, so I think it's a really nice way of making your the life of your fundraisers a little bit easier.
Yeah.
But interesting anyway. So, yeah. The other thing I was going to say is look at your sort of low hanging fruit for diversifying things.
Mm.
So, charity as a service is something that Enthuse's Summer Donor Pulse report highlighted that might be an option. I think there were Gen Z and millennials were most interested in this, but it basically means giving your donor something in return. And I was thinking about different ways you could do that. And the popularity of charity lotteries is huge now.
Yes.
Newcastle Dogs and Cat Shelter, you can read their case study on our website. They've grown their lottery massively. Yeah. And they're a regional cats and dogs shelter. And exactly. they're raising a lot of money now through this thing. And I just think it's a really great way. And there's lots of digital ways of doing that with text to donate, which is the way that Newcastle Dogs and Cat Shelter have done it, but other ways too. And the amount of times I've been close to signing up. I should actually sign up. But I think I love a lottery. So I think there's... And then there's also Gaming for Good, which it seems like it's... People are like, oh, quite hesitant to take up, but it's a huge industry. So it's worth £7 billion in the UK alone. And gaming and streaming offer so many opportunities because it's not just gaming. It's there's a really good interview with Georgia Payton from from British Red Cross. And she was talking about how you have to include streaming as well. People do quizzes. They've done a quiz with their charity ambassador, which is Jason Isaacs. It was a Harry Potter quiz because he played Lucius Malfoy in Harry Potter. There was someone who walked up the garden steps and it to be the same height as Ben Nevis. That was in COVID when you couldn't get to Ben Nevis. Mm-hmm. And they've done DJ sets, watch films and all that sort of stuff. And people love it. And I think if you can add that to your fundraising stream, that's a really great... It's so established already that it's not as much of a risk as I think some charities might see.
I think, again, this is one we talked about year on year.
Yeah, exactly.
We saw it in 2001 when I first wrote about it as an emerging field that was maybe worth a punt, I think. Yeah. And now it's why haven't you joined that as opposed to why. And there's so many, like Laura said, there's so many opportunities. There's a lot of content on our site as well covers how to get involved in it, how to approach influencers, how to get them to raise money.
Corporate sponsorship. British Red Cross have a really good page about how corporates can get involved if they want to, like sponsor stuff. And I think that's really, there's so many different ways that people can get involved in that and the fundraising.
Yeah.
British Red Cross also use it for stewardship. So they have monthly spotlights to talk to their past participants and...
Oh, yes. About like how their participation has also helped.
Yeah, exactly.
Impact. No, that's really interesting.
And ones where they talk to their ops team as well.
That's really interesting. And you know, going back onto the lotteries that you focused on earlier, I think perhaps it's one of the tools that can be almost like ticking in the background. There are a few of these tools that we might see more of in the future because, as we know, the sector has got not a lot of time and needs to, you know, obviously cover increasing operation costs and a lot of demand, and perhaps sometimes fundraisers that want to reduce their monthly donation amount. So there are a few tools that can help charities have more of a reliable, perhaps low, but reliable income that comes regularly. So mobile lotteries being one, being also associated with online shopping platform. Mm-hmm. So there's like of Savu and Give As You Live that provide, so basically it's free for charities to sign up, and then people, when they shop online, they associate some of their shopping, some of the spend with, they make a donation to the charity of their choice, really. And that can also take in the background. And that's, I would say, easy to set up and to find a lot more charities, you know, using it, doing it and getting inspiration from. So there's that. There's obviously the equivalent, as we've been, you know, covering a lot of climate change issues for the sector, and we have a perfect, you know, very great survey that Laura, Johan and Josie have written and created that you can check on our website. And part of that climate change content was also, you know, focusing on the need for charities to be closer to sustainability and to incorporate more sustainability in their activities and also in fundraising.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you mention corporate partnerships, there's also, you can obviously as a charity be associated with a brand that has got sustainability at its core. You can also be associated with sustainable brands that can donate some money to you or even some, you know, goods to you. Mm-hmm. And I think we're probably going to see that more next 100%. Year because loads of charities, especially after the survey we released, are even more conscious of the importance of taking a stance when it comes to climate change and being more involved in sustainability and encouraging their supporters and the beneficiaries to have more of a sustainable behavior and think about, you know, reusing things and recycling and limiting their impact, negative impact on the planet. So there might be some other tools around that can really help charities take the next step with that. I don't know if you want to add more, Laura?
So the one thing I will say is that sustainability policies and having one on your website is going to become extremely important to the charity sector, I think, going forward. It's one of those things that ticks along nicely in the background, but the minute you are found to have a bad sustainability I think it's a thing that sticks in people's minds, and consumers think about, I can't remember which report it was, but there is a report that says that consumers think about the environment so much more than they did 10 years ago when making purchasing decisions. That is going to transfer to the charity sector. It already has.
The rise of the eco-consumer, it's on our website, I think.
Yeah, there you go. And also,
plugs for the website.
There's also, as you were saying, corporate sponsorship, we've seen lots of high-profile cases of people being like, why are you working with them? That shouldn't be doing. But it's also looking at, so the reason I bring up sustainable policies is because that should encompass your fundraising. You should be talking about do you need an app for that? Or is it this app reusable? Because apps have a carbon footprint, right? There's also, do you need a tote bag for your event? Do you have a way to recycle those unused tote bags at your events? Even your medals that you give out, perhaps there's some new forms. Like, is it plastic? You probably don't want to be giving out plastic anymore. I think it's just making sure you're thinking about it in every way, but I think it's going to become increasingly important, especially in fundraising, and will have an impact on if people want to give to you if they think that you're not environmentally conscious, I think.
Yeah, definitely. The only point I'd mention on digital tools is actually how many of them from past years of so-called trends have kind of slid away. And I suppose the point I'm going to make is that you should maybe be cautious when listening to us, but also cautious when listening to anyone about the next big thing. AI is going to be a thing, and we know that. It's almost bona fide now. But it kind of has almost reduced all these other like things that we were talking about before. I mean, I look at you last year and we were talking about crypto and NFTs.
Oh, 100%.
And crypto has obviously played a role, but there's a new skepticism around it that there wasn't last year. And last year, I think we were kind of saying, and again, we're often wrong, but she's just pointed to herself, by the way, because she was actually quite skeptical about it. And by the way, I don't think you should be entirely skeptical around crypto, but there's a skepticism that perhaps last year the optimism was quite strong around charities.
We know more about it though, don't we?
Yeah, but charities, but I mean, one thing environmentally, we know it's not particularly good. And I think charities were a bit late in engaging in it, and then maybe haven't really taken off, and maybe that's because it wasn't as popular as we thought it would be. NFTs are a much bigger question, because NFTs have, I mean, I don't hear much talk about them at all. NFTs for fundraising,
the market for it has really gone down.
Yeah, and we basically wrote an article that was really successful on NFTs for fundraising, and we saw hundreds of people reading it every day, and now it's basically gets few reads because it just wasn't seen as a thing. A blockchain as well. I think blockchain is a more sustainable, a more long-term thing that exists in different ways and different things. But it, again, was a big thing we were talking about. The only reason I mentioned that is because not AI, but in the course of the year, in the course of 2024, there will be new fads and there will be new tech, and you should always take them seriously, and they may provide huge dividends. Look at gaming for good. Look at the way AI can be used. These things can be great for your charity. There'll be new social medias. People have taken themselves to new heights with TikTok, and they've taken Snapchat by storm, and so on and so forth. There will always be new things, and they could be good, they could be bad. But I think if looking back to the future, I think it's just sort of highlighting that a lot of these fads, or not fads, but a lot of these techs trends haven't actually manifested quite as strong as we predicted. But I guess my point would be practice a little skepticism.
I think audit what you have as well is really important, because there might be tools that you absolutely do not need, and you can get rid of them, and then that's reducing data in the world, isn't it? Is that a good point? I'm feeling like it's a bad point.
Yeah.
No, it is.
And it's the last point as well, so it'll stick.
Oh, no. Also, can I just recommend Edinburgh Science? Because they have a really good carbon calculator. on their site. And yeah. they've got a lot of tools, and it tells you how quick and easy they are to use for each one. And I just think that's a nice place to start if you're considering sustainability Definitely. Of your digital tools.
Absolutely. Yep. And I think, like you said, the sustainability angle and climate change, unfortunately, is here to stay. So we can probably say that is more than a trend. It's yeah. something that
climate change is not a trend, ladies and gentlemen.
It's
not a
trend. It's an emergency.
But there are quite a lot of opportunities for the sector to really be part of the conversation. Yeah. And was having a very interesting conversation the other day when it comes to data, because we realized that unfortunately loads of the beneficiaries of many charities are, especially Gen Z, I think, are going to be mostly impacted by climate change.
Yeah, exactly.
Perhaps not now, but in, you know, 10, 20 years time.
I've got a stat for you. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
71% of charities expect to or have been affected by climate change.
Where did you read that, Laura?
Oh, the Climate Action Report. Oh. It's called Climate Change in the UK Charity Sector.
And who published that?
Who wrote it?
Who wrote it?
You still haven't plugged it. That was Charity Digital.
Yeah.
Well, I said it, the whole country.
I thought you meant like you published. What do you want, a medal?
A plastic medal.
Never.
No, but yeah. what we were saying is that obviously they will ultimately have to deal demand-wise and service delivery-wise with the negative effect of climate change.
Yes, exactly.
And the social negative impact of climate change. So it's very important that they also see the opportunities it has in terms of fundraising. And I think another thing that we may not have covered enough, but that would be probably for another podcast, is the other ways that can that you can be supported, that you can receive support as a charity. And probably in the future we'll see way more people wanting to be involved and become volunteers, whether that's in person or online volunteers for charities. And whenever people cannot contribute financially, they can contribute their time and their skills to any charity mission. So I think that's also quite an interesting trend to follow, because you know, you can nurture these volunteers and maybe people can join you a couple of hours a week for your food bank or for to help your beneficiaries to read. That's the charity I'm particularly keen on. It's called Bookmark. I'm gonna be a volunteer. So helping children to with their reading abilities. So that's one way to to participate and to support the sector, even if you cannot contribute.
Yeah. And if you want to check them out, we'll put them in the resources section.
If
you want to check out, and we'll put whatever charities we can mention, we always try and put them in the resource section.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And so I think one of the trends is all around mobilizing and ensuring that your volunteers or your supporters can also become donors to your cause.
Yeah.
We're probably going to see a little bit more of, focus on mobilization and moving people from just a supporter base to donor base.
Yeah.
And watch out this space.
Can I also just add that we would love it if charities got in touch with us and told us what they think the future fundraising challenges will be, because I think you guys are working on the ground. I just think it's really... A lot of these challenges come up in a way that you don't necessarily expect. We have been going through perma crises, right?
Yeah.
So what we say now, these are hopeful, I guess, trends.
Mm. Yeah.
But I think as we've seen, the world changes very quickly.
Very quickly.
Yeah, let us know what you think the challenges are and what you'd like us to write about, because
we will write about it. We need ideas.
We're a charity that helps charities.
Exactly.
That's what we wanna do.
Exactly. And talking about the future of fundraising, we're going to have a free event on the 1st and 2nd of November, talking right about that. So check our website for the upcoming agenda, which we're going to have ready over the next few weeks. And it'd be great to hear more about what you want us to talk about during the 1st and the 2nd of November. And
yeah, definitely.
Are the topics we can cover in the future of fundraising.
Yep. Yeah.
that's great. Yeah. See you there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's still a long way, but yeah, see you there. But yeah, apart from that, I think that's all wrapping up for today. So thank you very much, Laura and Johan.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you. Yeah, Ian and Laura. So yeah, hopefully it was insightful for all of you. As we said, we put loads of... you know, all the resources, all the insights that we shared today in the resource tab. And we hope that you will join us again for another episode. Thank you.
Thank you.
See you next time.
We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.